ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। इन् अवर् लास्ट् क्लास् वी हेड् बीन् डिस्कसिङ्ग् 364th श्लोक वर्स् वेर् A beautiful thing is being taught by the scriptures and re-taught by Shankaracharya. Shruteha shatagunam vidyan mananam mananadapi nitidhyasam lakshagunam anantam nirvikalpakam. What Shankaracharya is trying to tell us, that hearing is better than not hearing, not knowing anything. Hearing about spiritual truth, about God, about the Atman, about the ephemerality of the world, it one has to hear. Hear from where? From whom? That is the question that comes. If you remember correctly, we'll see that Vedas are called Shrutis. Shruti means that knowledge which can be obtained only by realized souls and passed on through the tradition of Guru Parampara is called Shruti. So here also Shruti means, Shravana means Shruti. Shravana doesn't mean you hear from any Tom, Dick and Harry. Shravana means it has to be heard from a qualified teacher, and a qualified teacher must fulfill one of the two conditions. Either he must be a realized soul, which of course is very, very rare in this world, and the second is any person who is sincerely striving to practice spiritual disciplines and has advanced, much advanced than the disciple. From such a person, when this teaching comes, it becomes very fruitful. A story is told why this Yogyata or Guru Parampara system is so necessary. I recollected it in our earlier classes, I do not remember, either in the Bhagavad Gita or Vivek Chudamani or Katopanishad. There was a Brahmana minister, and one day he was late in getting to the court. The king got angry and sent servants again and again. And then ultimately, the king himself came to the house of the prime minister, found him repeating Gayatri Mantra. Just then, the minister had finished performing all the sandhya, and the king asked, "Why are you so much delayed?" And said, "Today, because of some reason, I could not complete it earlier, O king. And what were you doing?" "I was repeating Gayatri Mantra." "What is that Gayatri Mantra?" The minister said, "Unfortunately, I cannot give it to you." King said, "Why not? Anybody can give it to you." Then the minister said, "No, only a qualified person can give it to others. And I am not qualified." Then the king said, "You did not want to give, you do not like to give me, and that's why you are doing this." The minister said, "No, for everything there is something called a power, yogyata." And the king, of course, being dull witted, couldn't understand. Then the minister pretended to be angry and commanded the bodyguards of the king, "Arrest the king." Nothing happened. Again he shouted, "Arrest this king." Three times he repeated, nothing happened. The king, unable to understand the minister's words, immediately he got angry and he said, "Arrest the minister." Immediately the guard sprang forward and arrested the minister. Then the minister laughed out and said, "Look, it is the same words which I used, you also used. But when I uttered these words, nothing happened. But when you uttered the same words, arrest, immediately your people have arrested me because you have the power, I do not have the power. So this is a very important characteristic. One must hear it. And it is not only because of this fitness. A person who is talking from own personal experience, that carries a different stamp, a power of transformation, because the man himself was transformed. And the disciple also must be, of course, a adhikari, a fit disciple. So when a sincere disciple sits at the feet of the guru and carries on for a long time, hearing again and again and again and again. So then somebody questioned, why do you go on repeating all these things? Then the Shruti's answer, or commentators on the Shruti answer, Shruti is, means Vedas, that means spiritual scriptures, are like a loving mother. A loving mother never gets tired of repeating to the child any number of times until the child understands it properly. And here also there is some secret. How much time should a mother repeat these things? First of all, no baby can understand. He can act without understanding. Therefore, commandment. That is why all Vedas consisting of only Vidhi and Nishedha. That is, one is injunction, do this, and another is Nishedha, do not do this. It's command. That's why I have written some articles on the 10 commandments of, 5 commandments of Sri Ramakrishna. That is very important. Similarly, 10 commandments of Hinduism, by this time you should know, the Yama, Niyama of the Ashtanga Yoga. Similarly, the 5 commandments of Holy Mother also, which I expanded into 10 commandments of the Holy Mother, 2 of which I repeated, just for us to remind that the first commandment is, you have a mother and I am your mother. Every living creature must have a mother. In fact, every material object must only be produced by some material cause. That material cause of living being is the mother. But what Holy Mother is telling is that you have a mother, but I am not like your ordinary mother, who in most cases is as ignorant or even worse than you. I am your mother. This is the first commandment. Second, you are my child. Do not forget it. And live like my child. Do not live like the child of a Tom, Dick, Harry, a donkey, a dog, or an insect. Live like my child. That is very important. Only a person who is convinced that I am the child of the Divine Mother can live a divine life, not otherwise. Coming back to our subject, when a person is not in the position to understand, a commandment is necessary. Second, when the same person develops reason and sincerely tries to understand, then that commandment turns into loving inspiration. So here, hearing means, first of all, we must hear only about God, not about anything else. Because it is a subject about God, only a man of God can give us. And if a man of God is not available, we should not go to any Tom, Dick and Harry. If we go, that hearing that those words of God also turn into worldliness. Ramakrishna again and again warned this thing. Unless a teacher is authorized, his words will not be powerful. Here power means the power of transforming the life of the disciples. So without knowing, completely being ignorant of God is worse situation. Much, much better than that is hearing about God, Shravana, from a qualified teacher, of course, to a qualified student, disciple, guru, sishya. But as Ramakrishna also tells, that hearing is much better than not knowing. Seeing is 1,000 times better than hearing, and tasting is 1,000 times much better than even seeing. So hearing, then seeing, and finally experiencing it. This is the essence of this particular shloka we are going to study here. Shrutehe shatagunam vidyan mananam mananadapi nididhyasam lakshagunam anantam nirvikalpakam. So Shruti, reflection should be considered 100 times superior to hearing, and meditation 100,000 times superior even to reflection. But the Nirvikalpa Samadhi is infinite in its results. So 4 stages are enumerated here. First hearing, then thinking deeply on the subject, and that is what we see in the 3rd valli of the Taittiriya Upanishad. Bhrigu approached his father, requested him, "Hey Bhagavan, teach me about Brahman." And the father, and like anybody else, any Vaira Brahman, Brahman cannot be directly pointed out and say, "This is Brahman." Only an object can be pointed out, never a subject. And therefore he gives certain hints that from whom all beings originate, and in whom they live, and in the end, unto whom, in whom they merge. Find out what is that root cause, Mula Karana, and that is Brahman. Then he gives a beautiful instruction, Tapasa Brahma Vijignasasva. Realize Brahman through tapasya, means austerity. Shankara Bhagavatpada, in this connection, interprets tapas as deep thinking. There is a lot of misunderstanding. Tapasya or austerity is voluntary hardship. Voluntary hardship is fine. So some people, they give up food for a day or two, or at least one time, as we know, on Ekadashi day. And some people, they fast whole day. Some people bear cold and heat and praise and criticism, etc. But all these things, even a piece of wood and a piece of stone have already attained that state. Whether it is heat or cold, praise or blame, somebody pours milk, somebody pours hot oil, but the stone doesn't react. But a conscious being cannot do like that. What it means is, even if a person, he may experience all these things, but there are some people who are remain calm, quiet, enjoying the bliss of God, and that kind of mentality is necessary. Only such a qualified student, when he approaches, then the guru tells him, this is what you have to think deeply. The purpose of austerity is deep thinking. If there is no deep thinking, and many times it doesn't happen, simple I am pointing out practically, when Shivaratri day, we cannot think deeply, but we go on seeing, watching cinemas about Shiva, or hearing bhajans if we are in the ashrama, or chanting something. We do everything except deep thinking. So deep thinking is the real meaning of austerity, and that is what it is called, manana. Manana means deep reflection. Deep reflection continues in a particular way. It has a characteristic. Well, there are 2 characteristics. The first characteristic is, it is to think only about the truth that has come from the mouth of the guru, which is none other than what the scripture had already enumerated earlier. And secondly, that it is paramasatya, the only truth, guru shastra vakyeshu satya buddhi avadharana. This is called shraddha. So one must have be endowed with shraddha. But then what is the problem? The problem is our normal experience contradicts what the scriptures tell. So there is our normal experiences, everything is ephemeral. All beings in this world, they are born, they die, and we all have very little knowledge, very little power, very little capacity to tolerate anything, whereas God is infinite, God is all-knowing, all-powerful, etc. This contradicts our day-to-day experience. That is why we must have tremendous faith. As Sri Ramakrishna says, a child is told by its mother, don't enter into that room, there is a bogeyman. So similarly, there is something here, what is wonderful. Sri Ramakrishna says about Girish Chandra Ghosh that he is endowed with 125% faith, shraddha. Similarly, Nag Mahashaya. Once he heard Sri Ramakrishna expressing a desire to eat amlaki, and that was not the proper season, but he had complete shraddha. Whatever words, desires come in the mouth, from the mouth of Sri Ramakrishna, there must be a reality there. So as we know, he went and searched for 3 days, found out some amlaki, then only he came back. So that complete shraddha, even though what the guru taught directly contradicts my day-to-day experience, even while listening also it contradicts, therefore I must have complete faith in it. So to make that it is the only truth, then the opposite experience create doubts. So through yukti and shraddha combined together, we have to get rid of all the doubts that can arise in our minds, and they are sure to arise until we become completely possessed by shraddha. So now we possess shraddha. Shraddha doesn't possess us. That means sometimes there is faith, sometimes there is doubt. We go on oscillating between this faith and doubt. But a person who is completely possessed by shraddha, like Nachiketa, who is possessed like a ghost possesses a man and doesn't have any opportunity to do what he likes to do, at that stage, the man becomes completely convinced that what the guru said alone is the reality, and whatever I experience is completely unreal. Jagat mithya. Until that time, we should not behave as though jagat is mithya. Sri Ramakrishna has a pithy sayings for all these some beautiful psychological truths, that when a person is not mature in spiritual life and a thorn sticks into the foot, don't go on like a hypocrite saying that there is no thorn, there is no pain. While suffering the pain of the thorn, the person should not say there is no pain, there is no thorn. But he will come to that kind of state of mind where he really feels that there is no thorn, and therefore the question of pain doesn't arise. There is no snake, there is no fear. Curiously, there was a Greek philosopher, and he used to say this world is like a dream. Some young man wanted to tease him, so he was caught by these young people by the feet, and this old man was dragged on cobbled roads full of sharp stones. And while dragging, they asked him, "Sir, does the world appear to be a dream even now?" And his typical reply with a beautiful, beatific smile was, "Yes, it is a dream, but it's a painful dream." So there comes a state when there is no doubt about it. The purpose of manana, deep reflection, is to remove all possible doubts. Here is a psychology involved. What is that psychology? That we cannot put our mind 100%. We cannot concentrate until we are 100% convinced that what I am doing is truth and it is possible to realize that truth. Otherwise, if there is even 1% doubt, there will be some drawback will be there. The mind will be oscillating here and there. So this Sri Ramakrishna was telling about this beautiful truth that until you attain to that state, you accept and say, even though I do not know the truth, I do not experience the truth, but I still believe what my guru told me and try to modify my behavior accordingly. So, 1,000 times superior to hearing is deep reflection. And that is what we are supposed to do in japa. I mentioned earlier in my classes, japa is not repetition. Japa means reminder. Reminder means we have to be completely aware. I am aware of God, of God's presence. He is here. I must behave as though He is looking at me all the time. So this is called manana. But once the conviction comes, 100%, no doubt, the longing comes, vyakulata, what Sri Ramakrishna used to call, intense yearning comes. I must realize the truth. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful analogy again. Supposing there is a thief and he is lying in a room, and there is next door to him, there is another room, and he comes to know there is an invaluable treasure there, and the obstruction is a thin curtain. So can that thief sleep until he lays his hands on the treasure? A beautiful illustration. When we are convinced of the reality of God, Atman, Brahman, then only that longing will come. Until that time, our greatest goal is not to develop longing, but to do manana nididhyasana. And how does it apply to a bhakta, a devotee? Well, the guru has given me the mantra of my ishta devata, and he is my all in all. Natha tumi sarvashva amar. I do not know anything else excepting you, O Lord. And that firm conviction that excepting God, nobody else can save. And that is the greatest step Ramanuja outlines in his explanation of Sharanagati, Prapatti. Says that first I will take a vow. I will do anukulasya sankalpaha, what alone is conducive, what pleases my God. I will not do anything which displeases, which brings in his irritation, means he will be far away from me. If he is pleased, means he is very near to me. I feel the nearness of God is called anukulasya. Feel distance between him and me is called pratikula. Pratikulasya varjanam. And then only comes the conviction, rakshishyasi iti vishvasaha. That complete faith. Only God can save and nobody else can save. That would be the result of true manana. And then there is a longing comes. I know that is the truth. Now I am not able to realize it, and I will not rest until I realize it. This conviction came to Buddha one night, and that was the night when he attained the Bodhi, illumination. So he took a vow that let my body go to the 5 elements. Let the bones, the flesh, everything dry up. I am not going to get up from this seat. From this seat, this body is not going to move until I attain that illumination, which can be obtained only by many, many yugas of effort. So this is what is to link, that 1,000 times better than not knowing is hearing the truth about God. 1,000 times better than hearing is to reflect deeply and get rid of the last doubt that comes. And 1,000 times superior to that is to try to realize that truth in our life through direct experience. This is called Nididhyasana. So, Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana. And through that, if a person persists in Nididhyasana, then one day, by God's grace, he is sure to attain Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And this Nirvikalpa Samadhi is Lakshagunam Anantam. It yields infinite results, unimaginable result. In human language, this doesn't make any meaning. This is only another way of saying that once a person attains God, Nirvikalpa Samadhi, kingdom of heaven, paradise, and Brahma Jnana, Atma Jnana, God realization, all these are synonymous words. So through that, he attains three things: Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So what is Sat means? He becomes deathless, immortal, because there is no birth, there will be no death. Second, he becomes all knowledge. What is the knowledge? That I am Brahman, Aham, Brahmasmi. Thirdly, he will be floating only in the ocean of bliss, Ananda Swarupa. So this is what Shankaracharya is further elaborating. Nirvikalpa Samadhina Sputam Brahma Tattvam Avagamyate Dhruvam Na Anyatha Chalataya Manogatehe Pratyayantara Vimishritam Bhavet. By the attainment of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the truth of Brahman is clearly and definitely realized, but not otherwise or in other state, for then the mind, being unstable by nature, is apt to be mixed up with other perceptions. Nirvikalpa Samadhina, through the attainment of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which means constantly experiencing I am Brahman. Just as now we constantly, unbrokenly, from birth to death, through waking state, through dream state, through dreamless state, I am so and so. This experience never disappears from our mind. Some of you may get the doubt, what about deep sleep? Yes, deep sleep also. I am in this state where there is no mind, there is no body. I am myself alone. That is the meaning of Nakinchit Avedisham. I do not know anything means I am not aware of the body and mind, but I am aware. I am there alone. So through this Nirvikalpa Samadhina, Brahma Tattvam Sputam Avagamyate Dhruvam. The true knowledge about Brahma, Brahma Tattvam. Tattvam means the true nature, true knowledge of Brahman. Sputam, absolutely crystal clear. Not even one iota of doubt will be there. And once that knowledge is obtained, it becomes Dhruvam, eternal. That means there is no falling away from that. That knowledge will be me. So, na anyatha. But the mind, until it attains Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So, Shankaracharya here is talking about two states. That state after experiencing Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and until one experiences Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So what happens when a person is striving to attain to this self-knowledge, which is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi? What happens? Manogatehe chalataya. The true nature of the mind is restlessness. I'm sure some of you remember Swami Vivekananda's description of the mind. What is that mind? It is naturally like a monkey. A monkey by nature is very restless. And secondly, it is drunk. Thirdly, it is stung by a scorpion. Fourthly, it is possessed by the demon. What was Swami Vivekananda describing? By nature, the mind is restless, and it is drunk with innumerable desires. And each one of us are a storehouse of not desire, but desires. And if one desire becomes dominant, we think that is the only thing we want. But once that is fulfilled, other things come to the fore. Endless desires will come. And curiously, Swami Ashokananda's beautiful explanation. Why is the mind so restless? Because he says, the mind is restless because of only one reality. What is that reality? That I am Brahman. I have forgotten I am Brahman. Unconsciously, I am aware that I am Brahman. And now, because of this ignorance, I am running after all these things. So, until I know who I am, that I am Brahman, the mind becomes restless. So, to simplify, to sum up what he is telling is, the mind is restless, not really for any worldly object, but to become one with God, because it knows instinctively but unconsciously, I am Brahman and I want to remain as Brahman. Until I reach that state, I will not rest. And all other restlessness is only in search of this Brahman. So here is a beautiful truth, and Swami Ashokananda has explained it so beautifully. Man, in his ignorance, goes on searching. I become Brahman by eating a sweet. I become Brahman by obtaining wealth. I become Brahman by possessing power. I obtain Brahman by enjoying all the enjoyable objects. But as soon as he attains those things, instinctively he realizes, this is not what I am seeking. So again, he goes on searching. And this search will not stop until one reaches the highest goal. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful analogy again. That is why, you know, the greatest Indian poet is Kalidasa. And he is known as the king of similes. And Sri Ramakrishna is also considered as a king of the similes. He gives a lot of similes. So Sri Ramakrishna is illustrating this fact. One day, a servant wanted to contact his master. He knew the master was in a big room, but it was pitch dark, and the servant is not familiar with the room. So he enters, and gingerly he is proceeding forward. He touches something and says, no, this is not my master. Second thing, no. Third thing, no. Ultimately, he touches the cot. Perhaps master is here. And his hand touches the master's one part of the leg. And then he says, here is my master. This is the process of neti, neti. So the mind is restless, and without awareness, it is only practicing, this is not Brahman, this is not Brahman. But it has to touch like the servant to think, to know that this is not Brahman. So true explanation of why the mind is restless, it is restless because it wants to know that I am Brahman. It wants to regain its forgotten nature, that I am Brahman. This is called in Sanskrit, Swarajya Siddhi, obtainment of one's own kingdom. So, Shankaracharya, he is telling here, there are only two states. After God realization, which he described in the first part of this line, 365th shloka. The second line is telling that otherwise the mind will be in a non-realized state. And in that state, it is the nature of the mind to be restless. And then what does it do? Pratyaya antara vimishritam bhavet. Whatever thoughts, pratyaya means thought in the mind. So whatever thoughts are arising, and different thoughts are arising. Sometimes I am happy, sometimes I am unhappy, sometimes I think it is hot, Sometimes I think it is cold. Sometimes I think this is a good person. Sometimes I think this is not a good person. Whichever thought arises in the mind, so long as it remains in that mind, our true self gets identified with that. And instead of saying, there is a thought in the mind, this we say, I am happy, I am unhappy, I am feeling heat, I am experiencing cold, etc. So it is not possible until we attain Nirvikalpa Samadhi for the mind to become restful. And once the mind realizes that restfulness and true restfulness is available only in God, in nothing else. In God means, in dualistic language, go to Vaikuntha, go to Kailasa, etc. And in from the path of knowledge's point of view, to know I am none other than Brahman. So these are the two states he is telling. So what does he mean by this? Why is he telling? That's why the teacher is telling in the next shloka, 366. Ataha samadatsva yateendriyaha sada nirantaram shantamanaha pratichi vidvamsaya dhvantam anadi avidyaya kritam sat ekatva ilokanena. Hence, with the mind calm and the senses controlled, always drown the mind in the Supreme Self that is within. And through the realization of your identity with that reality, destroy the darkness created by nescience, which is without beginning. Therefore, O my disciple, you try to attain to that Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And you have to be identified with your true nature, with Brahman, not for one moment, not for 1 year, not for thousands of years or one yuga, but forever and ever. So for that, you will have to practice spiritual disciplines as instructed by me. So it says, ataha, therefore, samadhatsva, control your mind. Yate indriyaha, always be aware. Where is your indriya going here and there? How long? Sada, always. Nirantaram, without even a moment's break. Then, shantamanaha, be full of serenity. This is a very beautiful advice, because you see many times, even though we are sincerely struggling, we may not attain the result for some reason. We might become disappointed. We might become depressed. No, never allow such a thought to come. Absolutely filled with serenity. Prashanta manasam henam. Pratichi. And every thought must be directed only towards that Brahman realization or Ramakrishna realization, etc. Or remember Divine Mother always. Then vidvamsaya dhvantam. Dhvanta means darkness. Destroy this darkness of ignorance. And this ignorance is created by whom? Anadi avidyaya. It is created by avidya. Avidya means ignorance. And is it started yesterday? No. Anadi. Nobody can find out that when it really started. Avidyaya kritam. Sat ekatva ilokanena. By seeing everything as that one Sat, one Brahman, one God. Wherever you see only God. It's a beautiful story. I told many times, but it is a wonderful story. We all have to remember. It is related to one great devotee, so-called low caste devotee, called Kanakadasa. Kanakadasa was the disciple of a great soul, and the guru loved the disciple Kanakadasa, and that produced jealousy other disciples. So the guru wanted to let them know that why he is loving so much Kanakadasa, like Sri Ramakrishna. Why was he loving Narendranath so much? So much of jealousy was produced among the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, seeing how much Sri Ramakrishna used to love Narendranath. Then one day, Narendranath himself, he protests and said, "Sir, if you love me so much, you will attain the state of Jada Bharata." And Sri Ramakrishna was at that time in one state of mind, which is called child's mentality. Sri Ramakrishna's life, he always had two moods, the mood of a child and the mood of the divine. In the mood of the divine, instructions come and he pours out spiritual teachings unceasingly. But in the mood of the child, he's like anybody else. He becomes frightened. He desires something. He becomes restless. So he got confused by Narendra's words. Am I going to become like Jadavarta? That means my realization will go to dogs. It all disappears into ashes. That means I have to be reborn again, like Jadavarta, etc. So he ran to the Divine Mother. Says, "Mother, why do I love Narendra so much? The question is so deep. Any one of us must ask that question. Why do I love this person so much? Why do I love an object so much?" Because most of the time, we don't know why we love. We think we are possessing that tremendously great quality called love. No, no, sir. Nobody loves in this world anything. A husband doesn't love the wife. A wife doesn't love the husband. And if anybody shows that so-called love, it is only for the sake of one's own self. So, Ramakrishna was given beautiful reply. "You love Narendra because you see Narayana in him." Further elaboration. "You love anybody because you see different degrees of manifestation of Narayana. And to the extent you see Narayana, to that extent only you love." That means if you see 10% of Narayana in a person, you love that person. How much percent? Only 10%. If you see 50%, you love that person 50%. And if you see 100%, and you love that person 100%. This is the great illustration of what Yajnavalkya was teaching to Maitreyi, which we might discuss about it on another occasion. Because every saying of Sri Ramakrishna can be traced to the teachings in the Upanishads, and these great illustrations clarify the true meaning of the Upanishadic teachings, make us understand them much better. So, when I love, for example, a good sweet, I'm not loving, I have nothing to do with that sweet. But through that sweet, I realize God in the form of happiness or joy. And the moment that object ceases to be an instrument of happiness, my love for that object also becomes completely destroyed. In fact, I don't care. I only care for only God in the form of ananda, archit, or sat. So, here is Shankaracharya telling, "Vidvamsaya dvantam anadi avidyakritam sat ekatva vilokanena." You perceive God everywhere. So I was illustrating that beautiful story that the guru wanted to let the other disciples know why Kanakadasa deserves his love. So one day some devotees brought lot of bananas, and Karnataka is very famous for beautiful small bananas. So the guru called his disciples and distributed one banana. That means he must be having a lot of disciples. Otherwise, he would have given two or three if the disciples are less. So, but he put a condition. Go and eat somewhere, in some way, where nobody sees you. So they all said yes, went and hid themselves somewhere. And some person went to a bush and sat there and ate. Somebody went behind another bush and put one chadar over his face so that nobody can see what he is doing, and he ate. Some fellow more finicky. He went into a pond, taking a deep breath, he dived deep and swallowed the banana and then came out. They all came back. Guru asked, "Have you all eaten?" They all said, "Yes." "Did anybody observe you?" "No, no, sir. We took care that nobody sees." But the Guru pointed out, "And Kanaka, why did you not eat?" Kanakadasa said, "Guruji, what was your commandment condition? That nobody should see me eating. And wherever I look, I see Narayana looking at me, my Krishna looking at me. So how can I eat when somebody is observing me? My Antaratma, God is inside, God is outside, God is everywhere. So he is watching everything that I am saying, even though I think I am hoodwinking God and everybody else." So that is what he is telling. Sat ekatva vilokanena. By seeing the Supreme Self everywhere, you try to practice spiritual disciplines. Interestingly, Sri Ramakrishna had given this boon to one of his disciples, Vaikunthanath Saniyar. And he started saying Sri Ramakrishna nirantara, continuously, in the sky, on earth, in water, in every person he meets, in every object that he looks at. And he could not tolerate it. He prayed, "Oh Lord, I'm going mad. Please take away this vision." So also Arjuna. So also Swami Brahmananda. So also Swami Vivekananda. We all desire something which we are not fit to receive. That is why God doesn't give either material thing or spiritual things until we realize, until we become fit to receive it, to retain it, to enjoy it. So the essence of this shloka is continuously practice spiritual disciplines, which Brother Lawrence says, practice of the presence of God. Then what are those conditions? I have to tell you something here, that if you really examine the teachings of the scriptures of any religion, Christianity or Islam or Buddhism or Hinduism, all of them agree in one aspect, that man, impure man, should become pure. A man without self-control, mind control, should obtain mind control. A person who is restless becomes more restful. A person who is not having peace must become peaceful. A person who is not serene must obtain serenity. A person who is always running after worldly objects must slowly withdraw his mind. So this dharana and dhyana, samadhi, exactly sadhana is the same by whatever name it goes. Here are some things, very useful hints to all of us. They are not really hints, they are crystal clear truths enumerated in unambiguous words. Yogasya prathamam dwaram vang nirodha aparigraha nirashacha nirihacha nityam ekanta shilata. So if somebody wants to be yogi and he wants to practice yoga, here do not mistake, misunderstand the word yoga for anything else. Yoga means if you want to be a spiritual person, if you want to progress in spiritual life, then five conditions have to be fulfilled. Of these five conditions, the first door through which we have to enter, that means the first characteristic which we need to enter, is vang nirodha, controlling of our speech. We go on talking foolishly, all about ignorant things, repeating the same thing endlessly and meaninglessly. We don't even feel most of the time what we are talking about, and too much of talk is there. So the control over the speech is the very first step if I want to enter into the inner doorways, inner chamber of spirituality, want to go to God. Now, I was noticing last class we had that you people have started talking loudly with each other, laughing and joking. I have to tell you, it is one of the worst things that I have ever seen. Do not talk at this class with anybody else. This is not a social club that you have to go on talking with each other and loudly and laughing and talking. You have to pay sufficient attention. You are taking the trouble. So derive full benefit. Just be silent. If you want to greet me for a second, that's absolutely fine. But don't go on talking to each other. And that's why we have to be very careful about it. Vang nirodaha, first step. Aparigraha means find out what is necessary for your happiness, for your survival. Accept only that one. And do not simply accept, but return it thousandfold. If you can give materially, give. If you can't give, you go on praying for that person. Do japa for that person. Nowadays, a lot of people are doing japa because of this coronavirus. But corona or no corona, that we have to pray to the whole world because we are indebted to all the five things in this world. Rishirina, Devatarina, Devarina, then Pitrurina, Nririna, and Bhutarina. So if we are praying for others, it is not something extra service we are doing, but it is only for the sake of getting rid of our debt. And that is the only way we can move forward. So first thing is control your speech. And this controlling the speech is a great spiritual practice. Well, I will talk about it a little bit more. Then aparigraha. Then do not accept. Even if somebody gives you more, do not accept. But if somebody gives you for some reason, use it in giving it to other people who require it. And that is how the donor also will be benefited. You also benefited. Why? Because if you accept anything, you become indebted to somebody. And until you get rid of that debt, you are not going to move 1 centimeter forward in spiritual life or even in ordinary life. Then, nirasha and niriha. Do not hope for anything, unnecessary things, and do not expect anything. Nachiketa, when he went to the doorway of Yamadharmaraja and lies there 3 nights without food, then when Yama returns, his own family members, great wise people, advise him, if a Brahmana guest remains unfed for 3 days, all his asha and pratiksha, they become completely destroyed. So Shankaracharya illumines these 2 words. It looks as though there is no difference between hope and expectation. But there is a crystal clear division is there. What is that division? When we have done something and expecting something that is legitimate. I have written an exam and I feel I have done very well and it is natural for me to expect that I will pass at least in a better class. So, but hope means that without doing anything, I hope suddenly some Kanakadhara, there will be a rain of gold coins from the sky. So man suffers from hopes and expectations. The distinction again, I am making clear. Hoping means without any foundation, without any background, without doing anything, hoping against hope that my desire will be fulfilled. That's called hope. Expectation means I did something and I do not know what would be the result. So I am also expecting it. In both respects, however, it is something which is going to happen in future. So if anybody is hoping for something, expecting something, mind will be preoccupied with both these things. So give up hopes, give up expectations. Then how can we live without anything? because we depend totally upon God. Shakali tumari ichha, tumar karma tumi koroma, loke bole ami kori. So this is the attitude, a spiritual aspirant. I have a mother, she knows what is good for me, and I have complete faith she will do whatever is necessary. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. I hope you remember that ananyas chantayanto mam e janah paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. So this is what is telling nityam, that nirasha niriha. This is the fourth. What is the first? Control over the speech. What is the second one? Do not accept anything other than what is necessary, and that too, you return it in the, either in the form of same way, material way, or prayer, japa, etc. Then, do not have any hopes. Do whatever is necessary, but do not cherish any hope. Do not expect. Because if you expect, then there is a, you may be disappointed. One of our Swamis, very fond of saying that if you have an appointment, that is what is called expectation, then there is likely to be a disappointment. If you don't want to go through disappointment, you will have to give up appointment. So, but what does it mean? That rely on God, depend on God, and have faith in God. He will provide what is absolutely necessary. Nityam ekanta shelata. So all the time, ekanta means solitude. Seek solitude. Do not seek the company of unspiritual things in any form, men or objects or whatever it is. And that is what Sri Ramakrishna's third commandment. Now and then go into solitude and practice more intense prayer with great yearning. So the first steps to yoga are control of speech, non-receiving of gifts, entertaining of no expectations, freedom from activity, and always living in a retired place. So this is many times I emphasized this one. If our devotees have attained certain age and they do not require any money, then they have to give up these other types of external activities and to take to spiritual activities. You may ask, our time doesn't pass. That is a lame excuse. You render service to people, or you come and do service to people. If there are disabled people, go there and read out for them. If there are blind people, read out for them. If there are deaf people, go and guide them. If there are old people living alone and suffering from loneliness, go and speak with them. Just a few words. You know how happy they will become. So something can be done. But most important is thinking about God and cultivating that quality of total dependence upon God, so that we won't become bored. These are the times when we are all thrown into a peculiar situation where we are bound at home. And so if we do not know how to do it, there are of course ways how to waste our time through too much of entertainment, etc., and killing time. That is why in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, it is said, yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta svapnava bodhasya yogo bhavati dukkha. That yoga can only remove all our afflictions. Only these four conditions are fulfilled. What are they? Yukta ahara. Whether it is physical food or internal, intellectual food, it must be yukta. It must be beneficial. It must be limited. Vihara. Vihara means entertainment. Vihara doesn't mean killing of time. Usually, killing time is what we call relaxation. No, for a spiritual person, this is highly dangerous in every way. So, this is called nirjanata. I also explained solitude means Ramakrishna uses a word nirjana, nirjana sthan. Nirjana means, jana means people. Nirjana means no people. It doesn't mean a place where there are no people. Such a place where there is no disturbance, no people are there, very useful. But that's not the real meaning. Real meaning is, in this world, there is no person who can really help me in any way. That is, this beautiful faith comes only when I try to do things which please God and refrain from doing things which displeases God. That is what Ramanuja Sharanagati says. Anukulasya sankalpaha pratikulasya vajjanam. What is the third one? Rakshishyasiti vishvasaha. God alone can save me and nobody else. That condition is called by Sri Ramakrishna nirjanasthan. So nityam, try to practice this complete dependence upon God. These are some of the spiritual practices, and they bring not only spiritual benefit, but also many material benefits also will come. So this is what he is telling. The first two steps to yoga are control of speech, non-receiving of gifts, entertaining of no expectations, freedom from all hopes, etc., and always living in a retired place. That means live a spiritual life dependent upon God. These beautiful ideas, further very practical hints, Shankaracharya gives us further. We will discuss in our next class, which is going to be next Thursday. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhur.